This is Indigo Radio, deepening understanding and making connections. This is Becca for Indigo Radio. Indigo Radio is a project of the Spark Teacher Education Institute, based out of Southern Vermont. We are a group of educators seeking to learn through engaging with others in our community and throughout the world. Find us at Indigo Radio on Instagram or download a previous show on SoundCloud and Apple iTunes. Indigo is now broadcasting out of Southern Vermont, Western Mass, Atlanta, Seattle, and Morocco. Recently, I had the chance to sit down and talk with some of my old students about their thoughts on Palestine. And that is the show for today. Thanks so much for tuning in. Hello, everybody. We have Emily, Maya, and Michael here with us. Welcome to Indigo Radio.
Thanks Hello. For having us.
Hi.
So all three of you were in my classes in seventh grade social studies. But yes. It's been a while. Maya and Emily are now sophomores and Michael is a junior. So it's been 3 or 4 years since I've had you all. But you're still amazing and willing to show up for conversations, which I love. Thank you.
Of course.
So I wanted to bring you all together to talk about Palestine. And I want us to, you know, think about it from the perspective of you all are average teenagers in the United States today, representing Springfield, Vermont. And so we're going to have a conversation about how informed young people are about what's happening in Palestine and to hear your thoughts about what's going on. But I hope that this can really be a space to engage in critical thinking and questioning. So don't feel like you have to be the experts on anything. It's really like to be honest and sincere about what you know and what you don't know and what you want to know and what questions come up for you all. So just to start out, what have you heard about what's happening today when we talk about Palestine?
Honestly, not a lot. I've seen like the little things that everyone gets on their phones, like on Instagram or on YouTube ads, and a little bit from the news. And like, other than that, really not much, to be completely honest. Yeah.
Same here. I haven't really heard anything as of late. It's just last time I've really heard about anything, it was, I want to say, about a year or so ago. But I know that there is stuff going on because I hear like references around school and stuff, just not really any in-depth explanations of what's actually going on. It's like kind of just like not up for conversation a lot, I guess.
Michael, before you chime in, Michael, because I know you have more to say, but I'm just curious, like Maya and Emily, these tidbits, what are the words, what are the phrases, what are the, you said ads on social media, what are the, like, what is it that are those tidbits of information?
Some sources describe it as a genocide, which is what I personally, from what I do know about it, with like I agree with, it is a genocide. Obviously, some sources say it is a genocide, and then I haven't heard much on either side. Other, like, I haven't heard reasoning that has really stuck with me from pro-Israel sources. Yeah, there's not enough that I've heard to remember specifically from that side of the conflict. Mm-hmm. I did see that one thing though, where that girl was like speaking in a courtroom or something. And she was like, do not compare this to other genocides, when she was trying to make the point that it wasn't a genocide and it was a whole thing. But other, mm-hmm. yeah, those are a few things that I've heard.
Mm-hmm. Emily, what about you? Those few little things, is there words or phrases that?
I've heard it like referred to as like kind of like a mini war, or, like Maya said, a genocide. And I've also seen like little fundraisers or pins that say like "We stand with Palestine," and like profile pictures on social media say the same thing. But yeah, that's like the main gist of what I've been picking up on.
And Professor Michael, share your
Yes.
wisdom. What have you heard? What's your knowledge at this point of what's happening?
Where do I start? I mean, I could go back before the most recent hostilities, but I'll just start with that now because that's like what everyone's mind is. And on that, I've been following the situation, I would say, m more than most Americans. I mean, I've been basically watching it day by day since the events of October 7th, and I mean, I agree with Maya and Emily is very clearly a, well, genocide. But I feel like the reasons why are just not really like talked about in like mainstream media. For example, I mean, I went on like I think it was CNN this morning to like look what they had to say about the situation in Gaza, and they always it just kind of irks me because they always refer to it as people died, and they don't ever never refer to who killed those people. And then I go, I mean, I could use Twitter or X and like Telegram, Instagram, and I follow these people who are like actually in Gaza. And they tell a much different story. They tell a story I see as being under constant bombardment by Israeli warplanes. They're under gunfire by Israeli soldiers. And these are the kind of things I just don't really see in mainstream media. So I have both perspectives really that I'm seeing.
Thank you. And you were talking about why, like, beyond before this, that you had been following it for a long time. Fill us in a little bit on what you understand from, yeah, because I think that's a really important point that like a lot of people right now are like, ah, all of this started October 7th, right? But it
Yes.
didn't. So tell us a little bit more, and Emily and Maya, feel free to jump in as well.
I mean, I say this in self-reflection, but I wasn't very politically aware until very recently of the event. So I would say, like, I mean, I first like really got into understanding the situation in Palestine around 2021-ish, which coincided with like a change in my just overall political opinions. But aside from that, I knew about how Gaza had been under blockade by the IDF. I knew about the settlements that Israel had been establishing in like the West Bank, and I knew about the various other things, but I didn't know as much. Now, I feel like it's kind of been like a mask off situation that people aren't able to deny just how horrid the things that the Israeli government and the IDF have been doing are. Because, I mean, before October 7th, like from 2021 until then, I mean, it was talked about, but it was like just considered like another like normal thing that happens in the daily occurrences of the world. But now I feel like people have become a lot more conscious of the situation and are understanding just how bad things are over there.
Yeah, Michael, I would like to kind of go off of what you said, how you are kind of very, you're a lot more educated than a lot of Americans on the topic, and how a lot of people think all this started on October 7th. I Yeah, I agree with that. You didn't really hear much about it in your everyday life until October 7th. I think I remember in when I was in Miss Polk's class in the 7th grade, she explained a bit about the settlements and like Israeli people working for the Israeli government coming into Palestinians' homes and for basically forcing them out, living in their homes. And I think that's a few students from our school may still remember Miss Polk's lessons on that. But if there was nobody to teach them about that, I think that a lot of Americans might not know that there was even anything happening before October 7th. So, yeah.
I agree with you. As someone that's like my main recollection of what I do know comes from Miss Polk's lessons in the 7th grade, and the story that she had us read about a Palestinian citizen going through some of the what's the word I'm looking for? Invasions, I suppose, that were being made by the Israeli government and such. And from just that alone, I remember that a lot was going on. And I'm going to be completely honest, and I feel like I know this isn't a good thing, and I know that I should probably know this already, but I don't exactly know the events that transpired on October 7th.
Me either.
And I feel like it's just like skirted around, like it's this big topic of, oh, October 7th, this blah blah blah. Like, yeah, this happened, but what actually happened? Because like so many people in like the world just keeps mentioning it, referring to it, and like as you guys said, it's like the start of all this conflict of this genocide, as the media keeps putting it, but I don't actually like know what happened October 7th. Like, what is this supposed start of this genocide?
Michael, you want to comment or you want me to jump in?
Do I want to comment on October 7th? I'll self-censor myself here a little bit about what I would say about the situation of what happened. But the short and skinny that without simplifying it too much is, I mean, well, I'll go with the first misconception. The events that transpired on October 7th were not just in Gaza. They were also in the West Bank, that area, as well as Gaza, and also includes other countries. Now it's included like countries like Lebanon, Syria, which I don't know if you guys know where those are, Emily and Maya, but they're just know that, and they're in the general area. Basically, what happened was is that like armed factions of the Palestinian resistance knocked over, well, I would say it was basically an operation to enter Palestinian territory occupied by Israel. And I mean, I think one of the stated goals was to this one of the stated goals was to release political hostages, I believe. And also there were just general attacks on the Israeli military. What was really significant of it was the scale, is that armed like factions have been attacking the IDF for like years upon years. I mean, even in the news beforehand, they would cover like rocket strikes. But what really why people are talking about October 7th is because it was to another magnitude, and that Israel, whether by their own intention or not, got caught off guard significantly. And what I won't go into the more contended topics about it, but the Israeli military got sh they were struck hard, and they are obviously responding in a way. I won't even say responding, because that assumes that this is primarily because of October 7th. But I won't complicate myself any further. The armed factions of the Palestinian resistance attacked the IDF in significant force, and also, as you've probably seen in the media, took hostages from nearby settlements. So that's just the factual things of what happened.
Thank you, Michael. I feel like some of your wording is so important, and I appreciate like all the study and work that you clearly have done of like calling it like formerly Palestinian territory is an important thing, right? It reminds us that this is a long history. 1948, we're talking about that land was stolen, and that most of the population who live in Gaza are already formerly refugees from other parts of Palestine, but also that like that there are resistance forces within Palestine that are labeled as terrorist organizations. And there's a question of what is terrorism and who are the terrorists, right? Because
Yeah.
that's a really important piece of all of this. I appreciate, Maya, that you brought in. You remembered and Emily remembered learning things in my class. I actually pulled up some of your old work. So I'm going to read some of your words back to you. So I have Michael's here in front of me. He thought the big ideas that young people. So the question is, think about each of the, like, what are the big ideas that you want other young people to know and understand from what we've done in class? So Michael wrote about the curfew and how it affects young people by limiting their ability to do things outside. The checkpoints that serve to humiliate and harass young people in their daily lives. The taking of land forces youth to either share a home with somebody else or just move entirely. Military occupation affects everyone with less freedoms and more injustices and stuff like that. Got to make sure you add in that stuff like that. And that standing up for justice, this one can work, but they can be arrested if they are found to do it, like if they protest against the occupation and stuff like that. So, Michael, I think you have moved way far beyond where your seventh grade self was at. So, I applaud you for that. I don't know if you remember any of these topics when we talk about it, like the kids trying to go to school or Muhammad Al-Kurd in my neighborhood being forced out of his home, or the book A Little Piece of Ground, but those are some of the things that you are responding to. Maya, the statement that you wanted young people to think about was claiming or cleansing, evading oppressors or becoming them. You wrote, for years and years, Jewish people have been oppressed. Now they're oppressing Palestinians because the Bible, quote unquote, says it was their land. Palestinian people are sometimes called terrorists. I'm calling into question who the real terrorists are with these questions. So when you told me, I read this and you told me that you didn't know much about what was happening, and I was like, yes, you do.
That was very moving.
My brain does this thing where like in concern to classes after I pass the class, I forget. So I think I moving forward, I'm gonna, well, I say moving forward, but like I think now I'm no longer thinking of this in the context of something I'm learning in school, but yeah, as something like this is something that's actually happening to real people, and real people are losing their lives and being massacred and are dying. So, yeah, that's something to think about.
Emily, I want to read back some of your words to you. So the statement you wanted to make was that Palestine, a place that was once full of highly cultured people, peace and kindness, now in present time, rather than the calm land, is full of violence, bombings, forced ethnic displacement, curfews, unfairness, and unimaginably graphic scenes, all targeted towards Palestinians. This once amazing land is being invaded, and its people are being not only controlled and killed, but are being forced out of their own country. Now Palestinians are being met with violence for trying to keep their homes or protesting. Palestinian court papers will not be seen, and Mohammed Al-Kurd's experience of being thrown out of his neighborhood just for doing an interview to bring more attention to Palestine. You know, your seventh grade selves knew and understand what was happening. And it wasn't just because of my teaching, it was because of your engagement and wanting to learn and the put yourselves in the situation of a 12-year-old boy. It made you connect and want to understand, like Maya said, beyond the classroom. And I'm wondering how many of your fellow students you think have held on or have used that almost 2 months of discussions and conversations in seventh grade social studies to be a basis or a foundation to try to understand the world and what's happening in Palestine today.
I would argue from the amount of people that that I personally know of that have tried to engage in societally or like presently meaningful conversations about the world, not a lot that I've heard about. I mean, we have a little like social justice group, if I could phrase it like that. That's called AWARE. It's similar to the Youth in Action group that we had at the middle school. I think presently, including Emily and I, has about can't be more than 10 members. And yeah, so I think other than us, there's not a lot of people I know about that engage in important worldly conversation.
Adding to that, I feel like as a member of AWARE, I feel that we don't normally cover like present time problems as much as like community problems. Like we talk about it, but we don't normally address it in like a school fashion. Like, sorry, my cat is like attacking me. But like we more so address like problems within our school system rather than like societal problems or world issues like pa what's happening in Palestine and with everything else. But I also feel that there's some places that we can have the opportunity to learn about happenings such as what's going on in Palestine, and we're rather learning about other instances. Like I'm taking a class right now where we start every class with like quote unquote like current events, and there haven't been any utterings of anything other than what's happening in Springfield or in Vermont. Like we don't cover anything happening overseas in Palestine or any other like drastic horrific events, and I find that we need to cover it. And a lot of people don't actually try to learn about it because it's not pressured in a school setting, or not pressured probably isn't the correct term, but isn't like addressed in a school setting. And I feel like if this was more like addressed in opportunities like that, then people would probably be more aware.
And Michael, as someone who's like really making sure that you follow the news daily, why do you feel it's important that you and other people learn and know what's happening?
I know this is a very cliche phrase, but there's the phrase, those who do not know history are doomed to repeat it. And I think that kind of sums up my opinion on the whole situation. That being is, if you don't understand, I mean, present events and recent history of the situation, these things will be doomed to happen again and again and again. And it's until we really understand why these situations happen and why and how they can be stopped, then they will just keep happening.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Although I wonder if just knowing history is enough. And the
No,
reason
just no.
I, yeah, like the reason that I say that is because I feel like in this country, well, I think it matters the ways in which history is taught and learned, right? And the ways in which it both connects to ourselves and connects to the world and connects all the different things happening in the world. And I think about how in this country it's repeated over and over and over again, learning about, I don't know if in Springfield this is true, but in my own growing up, and I don't know if this is true for you, Kyra, I learned about the Nazi Holocaust many times, to the point where in that gave me the misinformation that that was the only genocide that ever happened. And I feel like, of course, that is an important thing to know and learn about. But the ways that it constructed my own thinking about the world meant that I was pro, like it was pushing me to be pro-Israel. It wasn't to learn about genocide, unfortunately. It wasn't to learn about the suffering of people. It was a politically informed education that ignored the German genocide in the or the Belgian genocide in the Congo, and it ignored Rwandan genocide, the genocide that happened in Rwanda, and it leads people to ignore the genocide happening in Palestine today.
I think you bring up a great point. To understand history, you have to understand what are the motives behind the people that are teaching you that history. I'll give a shout out to someone in the high school, Mr. Harris. He was a person that I think really opened my eyes to this, because before I came into the high school, I found myself looking at history from a very simple, maybe not probably too simple, and that I was just looking at the history and I wasn't looking at what the history was really meaning, and or why were they teaching me this specific piece of history, or why did I want to know this specific piece of history. And now I feel like I have the ability to take this information, and I can kind of reform it into a way that makes more sense with the conditions that they happen in.
Thank you. That's so important. And like Emily mentioned a little bit about one of the classes in which this could have been brought in to discussion, or like even just the skills that you're talking about, Michael. Like, what are some other ways that you all think that your teachers should be doing more in school?
Well, I'll just get this out of the way first. I think that you don't necessarily have to teach about specifically Palestine for people to understand the situation, because I understand it's very, very politically contentious, and there is so much mi misinformation, manipulation of what's going on, that pe a lot of people won't even engage with Palestine because they have these red lines in their head, like, okay, if someone starts saying this, they must be crazy. I can't listen to what they're saying. But if you go to other examples, like I know pro Israel supporters hate to make this connection, but with World War II, for example, if you look to what some of what happened in World War II and cross compare it to what's happening now, the similarities are just eerie. And I feel like if you teach kids to make those connections from history to what is happening now, that could seriously help our generation be more politically conscious with what's going on multiple subjects, not just Palestine.
وقف الطفل وحده والليالي ورصاص من حوله وجنوب وقف الطفل والحجارة أكوام وعيناه عزمة وصمود وعيناه عزمة وصمود فلسطين
Can't get the image out of my heart when we've seen the bodies found in a mountain of parts. Netanyahu told you just another child of the dark. Clear it's gonna take much more than thousands to march. More than a speech, more than a poem, more than a track of music. Gonna take more than a sit down with Bassem Youssef. Even bringing back ambassadors isn't Atlas useless. Long as you pump oil through Apaches and the tanks they use in freedom just beyond reach for people you cannot see. He's wheezing and cannot breathe and screaming through the concrete, looking for his four children. The bombs leave structures that I wouldn't want to call buildings. My fingers pointed at this government. You all killed him. Tell me that you wouldn't take up arms if those were your children. Let me make the factor clear. The bombs were manufactured here, and they want the land as theirs because of natural gas in there. Feel death in the atmosphere while we hapless stand and stare. And a little boy begs for his brother's strand of hair. Truth is, I don't know how anyone can live after digging for their dead kids buried under bricks. Israel is a terror state. Terrorists that terrorize. I testify, my television televises. I'm telling lies. This is not a war. It is systematic genocide. But whatever they try, Palestine will never die. Palestine. They're not prepared to face the pain, so they're scared to say your name. Palestine. They're not prepared to face the pain, so they're scared to say your name. Palestine. They're not prepared to face the pain, so they're scared to say your name.
That was low-key, Palestine Will Never Die. We'll return now to the interview with students in Vermont. And I played for them a clip from Democracy Now! Titled, I Always Imagine Myself Being Blown Up, by a journalist in Rafah. So we'll hear first Akram al-Satari and then the students' responses.
Well, I can't describe the situation. I will have to describe the way I'm feeling about things and how things are unfolding. Every single time I walk one step in Gaza, I always imagine myself being blown up by an unmanned drone or by F-16 missile or by a quadcopter or by whatever weapon that is used by Israel. Every time I'm walking in every single home I pass by, I feel that this home might be targeted and I might be ending up dying and killed under the rubble of that house. Every single place I stay, I moved from my home 6 times. So I am homeless and displaced 6 times now. And I'm waiting what would happen in Rafah. People in Rafah, as I told you, people are deprived from everything. Even the very basic essential things, the very essential things that are needed to lead a normal life or a semi-normal life or a life of internally displaced people. Even the internally displaced people in Gaza are unique and different than any other internally displaced people all over the world. All over the world, people are receiving and accessing food and water supplies. According to the Sphere book, Sphere book is a book that has been developed for the sake of just identifying the quantities that are needed and the calories that are needed for the people to stay alive at the time of famine or at the time of conflict, man-made or natural disaster. So people are not even accessing that very limited, the threshold of food that is needed for the people in Gaza is not met because the UN agencies that have been helping the Gazans are now tarnished, are now assaulted, are now attacked, and now the funding that is going to them is suspended. So people in Rafah and other areas have to do what would they have to do to survive. Some of the people in the Gaza and the north had to do to use the food to feed of the animals, to ground it, the corn, to ground it, to make sure that they can bake some bread for their families. They don't have rice, they don't have water, they don't have canned food, they don't have anything. And they have been calling for the world to stop that. And they have been even, the very emotional thing about that is that everything that is happening, including the most and profoundly shocking things, are happening live on air. People are just documenting their death. People are documenting their suffering. People are documenting their hunger. People are documenting their thirst. People are documenting their injury. People even documenting the hospitals when they are being raided and stormed in by the Israeli occupation forces. And the whole world, they have a feeling that the whole world is watching and that is not doing anything. And that feeling of helplessness is another way to kill the Palestinians. So if they're killed once, they're killed twice. Once by the ongoing bombardment that has been taking place, that has been documented, and the second time by not offering the fitting homage for those people, by serving justice and by stopping aggression, like was said by the many people that I talked to. The situation is extremely dire. You will never be able to imagine the things that are happening. When you're walking down the streets, when you see small children out crying for food, when you see them lining up hundreds of people for a very limited one pot of rice or one pot of food, and they are struggling to get some of that to bring back to their families. When you see small children staying unaccompanied because they lost the whole family, when you see one man who buried his whole family and who's walking down the street like losing his mind because he lost all that he dreamt would grow up with him, which is his children. He lost his wife, he lost his father, he lost his mother, he lost his house, he lost any hope in life that he can clutch to. I saw many people talking to themselves down the streets. I saw many people crying because they have no one to cry to. They have no shoulder to cry over. They have no one to look after them. They have no one to console them. They have no one even to offer them some kind word to look after them. And they are going to, and they're driven insane because of that. Situation is inconceivable. It has affected all aspects of life of Gazans, and it continues to affect them, and it has destroyed many lives, and it continues to destroy life, and it is likely to destroy any hope that Gaza would survive. And I think this is the plan to break Gaza and to make Gaza uninhabitable and to destroy any possibility for Gazans to relive or to rebuild or to just retake their life again.
So watching this journalist describe the situations that the conditions that he's facing that Palestinians in Gaza are living in right now, what are some of your all's reactions hearing about this?
If we start with just the content of the video alone, I mean, it's horrendous, but it's not surprising to me. I mean, the way I've seen it play out personally, just from looking at what's been happening, is it seems to get worse and worse every single day, even when you think it can't get worse. I mean, at the start, there was, it was just confined. What was happening was mostly confined to the city of Gaza itself. But now I think he's mostly talking about the situation in Rafah, which is basically what they have their backs to the Egyptian border. There they have nowhere else to go. I mean, like, there is some mobility within the Gaza Strip. Like, you can go from one side to the other, but now there is literally no more land. Like, there's no, and not to imply that any of Gaza was safe, but before there was at least like a promise that you could go to the south and be safe. Now there is nothing. Now all there is death, and now all there is suffering.
So as I've said, I think in recent times I've failed to keep up with what's happening in recent events, but from what I remember from class, I thought that the point, like the overall point, why people or why Palestine is being invaded was like for the land, I guess, like that Israeli citizens were coming to live inside of the homes of Palestinian people because the Israeli government wanted the land back. Or I say back, I don't know if they ever had it, but they wanted the land. And so what he was saying in the video about how he's, or not him, about how the land is becoming uninhabitable. At that point, which of course I don't agree that there ever was a good reason for this war to happen, but at that point, when the land that you're trying to obtain is becoming even uninhabitable, there is absolutely, completely no reason, even in their minds, really. There's no justifiable reason for them to continue these attacks and to continue killing the people, if that makes sense what I'm saying. Like, there was no reason that is good in my mind in the first place. But now it's even less like comprehensible as to why they're continuing to do this after all these like decades of this happening.
Yeah, well, this is just another form of Israel's war of destruction. Like, I mean, preferably they would like it if they could just push the Palestinians away without having to, like, they're fine with violence, but however ignorant to the real situation the Western public is, the Western public is not, it's just something that they don't like. So if they can make, they don't like violence, at least they don't like seeing violence, but they're perfectly fine if they can move that violence out of the public sphere, out of the eyes of the public, that is what they would prefer. But now they've been put in a situation where they are unleashing all of that violence that they have been doing under the surface. And I mean, I don't think what they're trying to do is very well hidden anymore, because they themselves are saying, like, I think it was an official from like the Israeli governmental organization that operates the settlement programs said, we are going to flatten Gaza and we will, from its ashes, we will build in a new Israeli territory. And they don't really need any house. They don't need any person that's living there. And so if they don't need it, they're going to erase it. And
like, you're right, Michael, that this has been like, this is one of my, like, I don't think ever before in history has a unfolding genocide been this well documented and publicized for the world to see. And I'm wondering why you think people in this country still are not taking, well, let me rephrase. A lot of people in this country are taking a strong stand, and especially with the like newest encroachment onto Rafah, it's like clear that if you watch the way that this bombardment has unfolded, it started from the north, people fled, then it moved to the next province, people fled, then to the next city, people fled, and now there's nowhere for people to go, like Michael said. But it's being so well documented and it's not hidden anymore, the Israeli occupation agenda. But still, this country, the United States, just vetoed a resolution for a ceasefire in the United Nations Security Council. And so I'm just curious what your all's thoughts about this are, watching it unfold, and why you think that it is still allowed for the United States to support such a genocide.
Well, honestly, I think it mostly stems from, one, our position in the world. So first of all, I mean, America is the global hegemon. We are the strongest power on the planet. And by that, by being the leader of the free world, I'm using air quotes, we are allowed to do things that other countries are not. And as to go to the people of America, I see a very big generational divide on stance on Palestine. So I feel like the Gen Z and the youth, this in general, seem to be much more progressive when it comes to the issue of Palestine. They are able to see the Palestinians as more than just like terrorists, as the mainstream media portrays them as, or victims, but not victim enough that they deserve our plight. Like, they don't deserve our recognition. And that's just because I feel like with these new methods of media like TikTok, like less, like more decentralized. They're able to see more than just what modern like mainstream media like portrays, because I don't think it's a controversial opinion to say that the American mainstream media is very heavily skewed in favor of Israel in almost all of their coverage. And if you look at what youth, or sorry, not what generations get their media sources from, the older you get, the more reliance they have on that media. So it's no surprise that the youth would be more progressive, because they have sources that are less inclined to propagandize in favor of Israel.
Partly because it's a difference between independent media, like we're watching people's cell phone footage
Yeah, it's like very.
versus watching like a corporate, almost government sponsored, at least like corporate sponsored agenda, right?
I mean, I would say you could say government sponsored. I mean, multiple of these mainstream media organizations are directly funded by, I
Well, you could say
wouldn't,
our government is corporate sponsored as well.
yeah.
So,
Well, our government also has the Israeli lobby, but
oof,
the,
APAC, yep.
I was gonna make a thing about APAC, but I'll save that for later. I'll give an example. So I was on TikTok a few days ago and I saw a video of Israeli soldiers basically filming themselves looting a Palestinian person's home in Gaza. And they were like laughing and like it had like a fun music track over it. And this is just like supposed to be some normal thing. Like, imagine if we had phones in like 1945 and we're watching like the same thing occur, but instead of Israel, which is the like an accepted like country, we go to something like Nazi Germany. It's like if we change the context, this would be completely unthinkable. But with Israel, it's just normal. I just don't understand that. To
Right. And we don't have to go all the way back to history. We can look at Russia's invasion of Ukraine and talk about how there's Ukrainian flags everywhere. And civilians were never targeted in the same way that they are now, you know, but people still like did not hesitate to take a stance. And it was even clear then, the reporters saying, but these people look like us. It's not somewhere else in the world, you know. There was a great interview that I saw of a woman who is Ukrainian. Her like one parent's Ukrainian, the other parent's Palestinian. And she's like, so the world wants to save half of me, but not the other half of me.
I mean, that's a great point. We could talk a lot about Western hypocrisy when it comes to these different events, but yeah, I feel like that is a really good point, just to show how, I mean, us as Americans are able to show great sympathy for some situations, especially when that we share well, I'll just say what it's really about when we share a skin tone with those people, and but we have no sympathy or very little sympathy when it comes to the plight of the Palestinians and other non-white groups who are just ignored or given some pity, but more in like the way like a human would like see for like a suffering animal, unless like they would see for like an actual person.
So we've gotten to the point in the, let's say just in the history of the Palestinian struggle. Like 10 years ago, the aim was to help people know what's happening. I would say we're there, right? It's clear. People know what's happening. What do you think the next phase of the struggle is for us in the United States to take it beyond, to make it beyond just being known what's happening, what do you think? And we can just talk about like young people in Springfield. What do you think should come next?
It's no longer a matter of letting people know what is happening because people do know what is happening. So I guess I'm not even sure what the next step would be. Would it be like just getting information out there in local communities to broader amounts of people? Would it be taking to the streets in rallies? Would it be writing to your local politician people? I actually don't know how it would work, what the next step would be.
Yeah, I think the idea of like protest is a good idea. I mean, in some ways, now I won't say I'm going to advocate for this because it's technically illegal, but like civil disobedience, for example, and other nonviolent actions. So I'll give a recent example. So in 2017, there was a Western-backed bombing campaign of Yemen supporting the Saudi intervention in that country. And in countries like the UK, you had independent activists basically going after the weapons that were being sent to assist. And so in that way, I feel like you don't have to be violent to be able to target the source of what is doing the killing. And those are the bombs, those are the planes, those are the rockets. I think going after those weapons that are being sent to Israel would be the best course of action.
Like a targeted campaign or protest.
Yeah.
Have you all heard of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement?
I have.
Yeah. Do you want to share a little bit about that? And it's kind of similar to what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, the BDS movement is basically, they've been gone for quite a while now. I don't know the
point. I believe it was 2005, but I'm not sure about that date.
I like BDS because they do something that is, it's not extremely unique, but what it is good at is that it's actually doing something material to help change the situation in Palestine. Because protests are great, but a protest with no energy is not going to get anything to move. What you really need are things that affect Israel's ability to commit genocide, its ability to create new settlements, its ability to further its agenda. And I mean, like the group's name, boycott, divestment, sanctions, all three things are very effective. And there's many other options of direct action that can help the Palestinian cause and help, you know, put an end, or not put an end, but help put the brakes on Israel's actions.
And it's a type of, it's a movement that's founded in a history of opposing apartheid in South Africa. It's one of the things that helped, like, the world could do in solidarity with the anti-apartheid movement trying to overthrow it. And there was a lot of parallels drawn between South Africa apartheid and Israeli apartheid that was kind of the impetus for beginning this boycott. And actually, since this most recent genocide, Ben and Jerry's has pulled out of its products out of the settlements, which has been a long-term campaign here in Vermont, being the home of Ben and Jerry's. So we've seen like a lot of movement, a lot of shifting, you can say, in work that's being done.
This next clip is from the People's Dispatch of New York City students walking out for Gaza that occurred on February 16th, where the high schoolers declared there can be no more school as usual while their peers in Gaza are being brutally murdered by Israel.
February 16th, high school students from across New York City walked out of school to demand an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and an end to U.S. support for Israel's genocide of the Palestinian people. The high schoolers declared that there can be no school as usual while their peers in Gaza are being brutally murdered by Israel.
We did a walkout today because we believe that even though schools can't legally talk about the Palestinian war, I think it's only fair that students need to rise up and say something, because young kids, adults, mothers, fathers are all dying in the war. And it's not fair that we stay quiet while they're dying and we just have to get up and come to school. We feel like we tend to be told that we aren't aware of what's going on, or that we are not as educated on what's going on around the world. And so we want to show that we do know what's going on. We don't support this, even in our education system. Even being in New York in general, we have so many people who represent us who are like supporting a genocide. And we want to show that if nobody older is going to speak up, we are going to do exactly that.
Friday's high school walkout was the second of such actions. In November, thousands of students had also walked out of school to demand an immediate ceasefire. However, following this brave action, students, educators, and parent leaders were targeted by unprecedented retaliation by school administrators and authorities from the New York City Department of Education for speaking out against Israel's genocide. After their walkout this past Friday, students, educators, and activists gathered at Bryant Park for a rally in March. Hundreds of New York City police officers were deployed to the march and made several arrests, but were unable to prevent protesters from taking to the streets.
We are all here together, united in a just struggle. In the face of repression from the racist and Israeli-trained NYPD, our solidarity has not wavered. And censorship from our school administrators, our solidarity has not wavered. We remain steadfast because in the face of over 130 days of Israeli terror, the Palestinian resistance has not wavered.
Whether you walked out of school today, have joined us after a long day of schooling and teaching, or are joining us from elsewhere, today we amplify our youth leaders' call for an immediate cessation of Israeli genocide of Palestinians, full divestment from the terrorist organization known as Israel, and justice for Palestinians who have suffered at the hands of the United States-sponsored genocide. We're here today to demand a free Palestine from the river to the sea.
Like many of us, students in Gaza are also in their last year of high school. And if anyone has family in Palestine, you know how important the last year of high school is, also known as Tawjihi. So students in Gaza, in their last year of high school, start preparing for this exam from their start of the academic year. So a typical student, a Palestinian student in Gaza, that's in their last year of senior year, should be buried in their books. But instead, they're quite literally buried under rubble. 36,000 Palestinians are dead or currently presumed dead under rubble. 379 destroyed schools. It's our duty to come out here and protest on behalf of Gaza, on behalf of children like Sidra and Hind, and students like us who deserve an education but instead are facing the bombardment of the genocide state.
Organizers declared that they will continue protesting along with millions across the globe to demand an immediate ceasefire and an end to Israel's brutal occupation of Palestine.
Can you all respond to what you've seen of the high schoolers walking out in New York City?
Seeing all these students doing this, I wonder, like, what percentage of that school was actually out in the streets? Because obviously, New York City is a lot bigger than Springfield, Vermont. But, like, how many students were actually there in reference to how many students attend their school? Because to us, that may look like a lot of people, but that could just be like, I don't know, a third of the school or something. So I'm a little curious as to how many people in that school were passionate enough and, you know, who were passionate enough and knowing enough to go to this rally and walk out of school for this?
I don't know the answer to that, but my what impresses me the most is that it wasn't just one school, that this was organized across many schools.
Oh, wow.
So there's like students from all over New York City, I believe, like not just from one school, which means they had like, they were organized. And I feel like that's a big thing that's missing, in my opinion, amongst us.
Yeah.
In general, is that like we might have people who are sympathetic, or like there might be sympathetic people or people who are horrified by what's happening, but we lack an organizing or an organization or organized activities to be able to do something profound as this.
Yeah, I know, like, in the past, members of, like, in 2020, members of AWARE put together a Black Lives Matter protest in Springfield, in town. I think it was in the parking lot of the co-op. And looking at pictures, it was very well organized. There was a lot of people who attended, not just from the school system, but like citizens and just everyday people in Springfield. So I would like to talk to them at some point, maybe to ask how they organized and how they were able to spread the word and put together such an event. That might help us in the future to hopefully get like Springfield citizens acting on what they've seen in the news.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with that. I feel like the primary issue here is an organizational issue, not a, like, I have no doubt that there's definitely support for Palestine within our community here in Springfield. It's just, I wouldn't say it's a leap, but there is some, I wouldn't say risk, but there is some fear, because, you know, Palestine is a very divisive issue, especially, I mean, us here in Vermont like to think of ourselves as being very progressive, but in many ways this is something that might not be considered, especially if you say certain things around it and you don't both sides it, you can take a lot of flack. And I mean, so there is some understandable amount of fear, anxiety about showing your real opinions or speaking up. But if we want anything to actually be done about it, though, that fear is going to have to subside at least a little bit.
It's interesting because I feel like, I have two thoughts to what you're saying, Michael, that it's a divisive issue because, like, tactically, pro-Israel has made it divisive by labeling anything questioning Israel, or not even mentioning Israel, but anything on the side of Palestinians, by labeling it anti-Semitic, it shuts down every conversation. So I feel like there has to be like a real like understanding of what's happening to be able to counter that labeling. And like nowadays, I was thinking about it this year. If I was like coming up in March would be when I typically started the Palestine unit. And there was not really questioning or pushback when I was teaching it. In Brattleboro, there would be. There's a stronger Zionist community that was kind of monitoring Palestine talk. But today, there would be. This year, there would be, right? And so I've been thinking about like what I would do as a teacher. But beyond that, something that was interesting when I was reflecting back on the last time I taught, because it's been about 3 years since Maya's year was the last time that I was in Springfield schools teaching this. And something interesting that happened, and it's connected to, I think, my question of like, is Black Lives Matters also divisive? Because we have a very like pro police stance that happens in towns like Springfield. And so there were students who would have been, whether it was just because of their parents or whether they actually believed it, kind of anti-Black Lives Matters, who first learning about Palestine were very, let's say, sympathetic and horrified. You know, they could take this, they could understand and kind of naturally, as humans, be want to stand up for Palestinians, understanding the plight of Palestinians. And as soon as like the end of the unit where I brought in information about how the it's Israel is a US ally and US is funding $3.8 billion a year, there were a few students that automatically were on the side of Israel, who had the day before been opposed to what Israel was doing. And so it brought up for me like this kind of allegiance to anything US government would sponsor or support. And it like dampened, so those two things for me of like patriotism and the fear of an being anti-Semitic dampened the struggle for liberation of Palestine in the United States. And I'm curious your all's thoughts on those two ideas.
I mean, yeah, to comment on that blind faith in the American government. I think Michael was telling me about this the other day, or no, it wasn't Michael telling me, but Michael and a few other people were talking about it in a group chat, how there was a couple of girls in an English class at the high school who didn't know about like the bombing of Hiroshima, and then when told about it, didn't believe it happened and said, and quote, the US government wouldn't do that. And I think that's such an odd stance to take, to be so like blindly trustful of a bunch of people that you've never met, that you don't know what they could do, and you know, just believe in them because that's what you have always been told to do. And I think that's very, yeah, that's something that a lot of people are doing now as well. Like, oh, Israel is a US ally. We need to say like we need to fight with Israel. But that blind faith stops them from being able to form their own personal beliefs and opinions on the issue. And instead of doing their research and looking at multiple perspectives, they're just stuck in the one perspective that they've been stuck in.
Yeah, because without a deeper analysis of the situation, any information that you get is just working to confirm what you already believe.
Exactly.
Have you all experienced that? Like, did you have to do you have to do work to undo what you've been taught or what you've learned about the world in order to move beyond that and see the world, see things as they are.
100%. I
Yeah.
mean, I think I told Maya this phrase once, but to have a real nuanced opinion about the world as an American nowadays, it's you're basically burning nearly 100% of what you know about the world down, and you have to start from su you have to start from such a clean slate. It's honestly ridiculous. I mean, in my personal like history, as I've moved on to like having a more like realistic and like outlook of the world, There's been this mold, there's been so many things that I've stumbled across where I've been taught one thing and then I have to look at this like, wait, is this true? And I look into it, it's like, and I look in deeper, it's like completely BS, or it's either that or it's misconstrued in a way that is more favorable towards America and its allies. And that is something really hard. Because I know all, it's not just me, obviously. It's every single one of these kids that goes through the American education system and the American way of life that learn these things that are not true.
I think I'm like, I don't want to say lucky, but something of the lucky sort that I started to learn about how things are and take a deeper look into things at a younger age. I think I started really like focusing on things when I was about 12 or 13. I think it was about the time I took your class, actually. But yeah, so when I was in such a developmental age is when I started to really form my own opinions, which I'm very glad for, because I think if I had not started doing that at such a young age, that I would be stuck in one mindset for my whole life, and that would not be good.
So what do you think should be done moving forward, both personally for young people like in Springfield, young people in Vermont, young people around the world? I mean, we could talk a lot about what we think the government's coach should be doing, but I'm curious more on, based on what you believe and what you want to see in the world, what do you think can, like, starting with us, can be done?
I think starting at the smallest level, personally, I need to educate myself more, and I need to, you know, take in more sources, more information, and really like immerse myself in what's happening. And then from there, I think, yeah, we need to kind of widen into our communities, if that's a good way to phrase it. We need to, yeah, expand is what I mean. We're, like, expand into the communities and really like see how many people actually know about what's going on and care about what's going on. And I guess eventually a local goal is to do something of the form of the walkout or a protest or something that is a community minded thing, or at least that's my thought.
I agree with a lot of what Maya said. I think it's just about what we can do to start. Is, I think the best way is just to educate ourselves. I think it's like a good saying, like, you gotta look into yourself before you can judge others. I feel like we as a, I mean, you could say as America as a whole, but specifically in Springfield, we gotta, I think we need to question ourselves more, question our role in the world, question why do we do certain things? Why are we involved in certain places? And why do we decide to take certain actions, to really understand? And with that understanding, I think all the other things that we want, solidarity with Palestine, will come.
Well, I stand with you all and support your actions that you decide to take here. So let me know what they look like. Do you all have any final thoughts before we wrap up for today?
I do. So as he said, as the reporter, as he said in the video, people are just really watching. The world's eyes are on Palestine right now. And I just remembered a quote that I think I painted on a piece of board for you back in seventh grade, which is, silence is compliance. And I think that really rings true right now, that if we keep sitting here and watching these bad events unfold, watch the people die, that we're going along with it and we are in support of the genocide. So we shouldn't stay silent. We should speak up and let it be heard that we can't let this keep happening.
Thanks so much for listening to Indigo Radio. We heard from Maya, Emily, and Michael, high school students in Vermont, speaking out about Palestine. And that's it for our show today. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Instagram. We will end with the rest of the song from Low Key, Palestine Will Never Die.
They're not prepared to face the pain, so they're scared to say your name.
From the river to the sea.
Churches and paramedics is hurting, the panic spreading. Hospitals where the doctors do C-sections, no anesthetics. The pressure is manifesting, humanity stands connected. Masses seem apathetic and actually just accept it. When our grandchildren ask us, what did we do to stop it? I'm determined to say, I did more than make music on it. That's why we shut down arms factories. You can try stopping us. Palestine action's the opposite of white phosphorus. We tell them on the television, but they never listen. Tell Piers Morgan that resistance isn't terrorism. They want them fled or missing, death or prison, endless killing. I seen a father hold his baby up, the head was missing. Imagine demolition of home where your parents living. Kings won't say a thing, but at least we know that Yemen's with them. Ethnic cleansing, it ain't hard to see the stages, but Gaza is a graveyard of the invaders. Ears close to the savagery, clear though when there's clarity. The journalists and doctors are heroes of humanity. The sordid and as gory as this story is for now. And they depopulating Gaza for Ben-Gurion's canal. Israel is a state, terrorists that terrorize. I testify my television, televise, I'm telling lies. This is not a war, it is systematic genocide. But whatever they try, Palestine will never die.
ولن ننحل من هذه الأرض بل سنتقدم إلى أرضنا إلى بلادنا إلى فلسطين